Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's edition of the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and today on the Roundup, we're going to be covering three topics in international education news that have crossed our feeds in the last few days. And no guess as to what the main topic will be today. Pretty obvious in terms of the impact it's having on everything we do in international education. And we'll be sharing with you our thoughts on how some of the news stories are breaking and how it's impacting what you do in international ed. And I wanted to send a special shout out to everybody who watches live on the Facebook page, obviously, but also those who catch us on repeat on the Facebook page or on our YouTube channel. Really appreciate you taking a part of your day, particularly those of you that are working from home now and are having an opportunity to perhaps take advantage of some of these opportunities to catch up on news stories and how they impact what we do in our business in international education. And what we do each week on the Roundup is take a look at three news stories that have been prioritized in our news feed over the last few days. And one of those, where we show these each week, is we take a look on Mondays. SMIE Consulting produces a weekly newsletter, comes out Monday morning, 9 a.m. Eastern. And in that newsletter, we profile the top news stories in the field that have happened from a variety of different news stories around the world, news sources around the world. And we ask you to, we profile three of those news stories here on the Roundup on Wednesdays. So that's where we get our information from. So if you aren't already subscribed to the newsletter for SMIE Consulting, I'm dropping the link into the comments section on the Facebook page, and certainly encourage you to check that out. And I'm inviting all of my colleagues who are working at home, come online and check us out here on the Roundup, because I know that's almost all of you now in international education. Welcome to my world. This is what we do now. And what we do with the newsletter each week is, again, we take three of those top stories and we go a little bit more in depth here on the Roundup to make sure that we kind of flesh out some of those stories and how that might be impacting what you do. Okay, so starting the watch party for everybody involved, and thanks very much for being a part of the Roundup this week. For those of you who are listening on the podcast, whether you're on iTunes, Google Play, Podbean, Stitcher, or Spotify, really happy to have you with us again. And we've crossed 600 downloads on the Roundup since we started. This is our 80th edition of the Roundup, and very happy that you're making a part of your day here on Wednesday, March 18th. So let's get right into it. And no surprise and prizes for guessing what's the topic of the day, COVID-19 and its impact on our industry. Throughout the course of the Roundup over the next 20, 25 minutes or so, we're going to be dropping some links into the comments section on the Facebook page that are referenced in our news features from our newsletter earlier in the week. But hopefully you can take these, and if you haven't already seen them, I'm sure many of you who are on the ISSS side have certainly seen these first two that we're sharing. And those are documents from DHS related to potential procedural adaptations for FNM non-immigrants, particularly related to reporting procedures for changes in courses that students are able to take. And we're dropping first the initial notice that came March 9th, and then also the COVID-19 guidance for SEVP stakeholders that came out on the 13th. So these two are connected, and the one on the 13th, the second link I've just posted, certainly goes a lot more in depth. And this kind of outlines, for the first time in living memory that I can remember having been a part of SEVP when it first launched, DHS when it first launched in post-9/11 world that we grew up in as international student advisors, as an international admissions representative, as a DSO, from the beginning, DHS has not exactly been the most user-friendly government organization to interact with. And all my ISS people said, amen. So thank you for having a heart. And that's where we're starting today. Because we all know those who know the regulations as international student advisors, as DSOs, as AROs, as ROs, you have a limit to the number, particularly for F students, you have a limit to the number of online courses you can take in a given semester and a given academic term. Normally that works out to one per term. And what has happened, the reality that has happened on the ground for international students because of the unprecedented nature of the COVID-19 pandemic, it's forced universities to close their campuses in most all intents, for all intents and purposes, in most all cases at this point. That has not closed down the courses that are being offered, but it's moved them online. And as a result, international student status was very much put in jeopardy by this change in order for students to be able to continue to be enrolled at that institution in legal F1 status. So this guidance that SAVP, ICE, DHS has put out certainly allows for flexibility that for a government agency to make that that exemption or exception so quickly after these decisions were being made by institutions to go completely online. It's really allowed international student advisors the flexibility not to have to go, oh my gosh, what am I going to do for these hundreds and hundreds of students that I have that are now impacted directly by this and potentially out of status, and are they going to run afoul of that unlawful presence? Thankfully, that was addressed earlier by another court, but certainly the 10 days, the 10-day rule is still in force that schools, DSOs must input into CVS changes to curriculum for their students. And be happy to hear from any of my colleagues that are out in the field, obviously dealing with us on a day-to-day basis, how those conversations are going with your students related to going all online and their status and that type of thing. I know some campuses that are not completely closed. There's issues with foot traffic coming into their offices, and are you still able to have face-to-face meetings? And if you can't, most people aren't. How are you doing that electronically? Are people Skyping in? What are you making available for those kind of conversations that need to happen? Hopefully you've obviously communicated to all those students that have decided to stay and even those that have gone home, because that was an option that some students decided if they could get home, they did, because one, they were kicked off campus, and we'll talk about that in a minute too. But you look at the potential implications to visa status, this guidance that came out also addresses a little bit of this, that if a student does go home to take their classes all online to finish out the academic term and hopefully return in the fall, that they would not fall out of status, so they would not have to apply for a new visa, that their existing documents, as amended correctly by the DSOs, would allow them reentry. Hopefully they got travel signatures before they left. And obviously that's not always been possible. In a lot of cases where there wasn't the ability to have that kind of direct contact with students. So curious to find out from those of you in the field what your experiences have been on that front and what you might have to say and how that might have impacted your day-to-day work. But certainly DHS for first time is in a very, very long time, if at all, ever, has shown that they do have a heart and not putting even more stress on international students than they needed from the government to that might impact their status as international students in the United States. So kudos to SEVP, DHS, ICE for stepping up and making the guidance much clearer in terms of what students can do in this current situation. Certainly want to give a big shout out to Karen Fisher at the Chronicle. She's been on top of this, and certainly if you're not already following her weekly newsletter, Latitudes, that comes out on Mondays, following her on Twitter is a must too, because she's plugged into government officials that, in fact, broke the story to her about the changes to the regulations or the relaxation of the enforcement on regulations that would allow institutions the ability to let students in this crisis do their classes all online, because that's what the universities are doing. They don't have an on-campus option anymore in this period. So it's encouraging. If you're not already connected with Karen on social media, certainly I encourage you to start following her on Twitter. And if not Twitter, certainly registering for her newsletter. Very informative and gives you great content on an ongoing basis that will help you stay up to date with what's happening in the media and the government as it impacts what we do. Now, next story here is one that it does take a lot, because I've been in the business for more than a minute, and in the 27 years now, this July, that things that I've seen and happen in terms of the way universities act, the way governments act. So there's been some horrendous decisions made I've seen over the years, but certainly one thing that really sticks out to me is what's happened in the last week and a half now, at some universities, and universities that I think would know better, and the way systems have been set up at a lot of institutions. I asked the question on social media last week about when obviously the trend was everybody's going online, what does that mean for your day-to-day life on campus? The question was asked, for those campuses that are going all online and deciding to close your campuses, what are you doing for your international students that might not even be able to go home, even if they wanted to? And this question was intended. I asked it up on the International ACAC Facebook group and other forums as well. Is getting at, well, what do you value as your institution? Is it more important for you to close your campuses in the interest of public health, or is the most important priority caring for your students? And some will say that those are directly related, but the reality is for many international students, but also first gen and low income students, they don't have options to go home. It just wasn't a physical possibility. International students couldn't go home because there weren't flights back to their home country. There are travel bans in place for going to India was an impossibility for a lot of students. So how are they directly infected? So we saw institutions, and surprising by the institutions that were on this list. First article I've dropped is one from the Daily Pennsylvanian for UPenn had a student that basically was quoted in the article, "Not everyone has a home to go to." Because of restrictions and costs and all of that that's involved. And it's and this was before information we touched on earlier from DHS that came out that allows the online courses where students were worrying about them being able to legally go back and then maybe not being allowed back in the country. So that was a particular sticky question that I don't think universities that made decisions to kick everybody off campus, those that were on, and a lot of this was happening during spring break times that, like Harvard and in this next story, an Inside Higher Ed story was profiled, that they told their students they made the decision, send it out during spring break. When at the end of spring break, don't come back to campus, go home. And I found this particularly troubling in terms of not only the decision at schools like Harvard, and certainly Cornell, MIT, and others are on this list and profiled in that Inside Higher Ed story, making the decision, nope, you have to leave campus now. Don't come back from spring break, or if you're on campus now, you have to leave by the time spring break is over. What does that say to your international students? To your first-gen students, to your low-income students, some of the most well-endowed institutions in the world, are saying to their students, "Sorry, you can't be on our campus, in the interest of public safety, public health, frankly, is the rationale for it. Each of those institutions, and some of them may have made more public notices than others in this regard, but for an institution to say to their students, sorry, you got to leave with a week's notice, that is unprecedented. Obviously, the times we're living in are certainly unprecedented in that regard. But for your most vulnerable students, it seems quite out of character that institutions would either, well, you have to fill out all this paperwork to justify why you need to stay, rather than having conversations with the stakeholders on your campus to say, does this process make sense for the various people we're talking about here? And that's something that I think is really, a lot of the decisions that were made, perhaps were made in haste, knee-jerk reactions, however you want to cast it, but it seems to be so very short-sighted to treat those students that are most at risk and most bound by other constraints beyond just paying their tuition bill every year. Maybe some of them require significant help to pay their tuition bills every year to attend your institution, that they have now to leave campus in a matter of a few days when they may not have a place to go. Maybe there's a support network at your institution's a strong host family program that is being called on and activated in these kind of emergency situations. But the reality is, to force them to go through, become the exceptions, you have to apply to be exempt from this rule to be banned, rather than carving out, okay, we are requiring students that cannot go home, you are welcome to stay, and here's what you'll be able to do while you're on campus, and what you can't do. And then those who can go home should go home. Why is that policy and that need to slam the door shut and say, sorry, you're not welcome back on campus? It just seems to me there's a disconnect that's happened there, and the way each of these messages were carried out on campus is probably very different from college to college, but that really speaks to a sense of institutional priorities not meshing with the students' needs. And I know there are, for folks who responded, and thank you to those who did respond, across the different platforms, what your campus was doing, if you are closing down and asking students to leave, what the process was in place, or if there was a process in place, how to handle your international students. And that's something that I appreciate those that are taking the time, but the ones that said, hey, we're putting in place this process where they have to apply to become exempt from this new policy, seemed to me to smack of some misplaced priorities, at least at the institutional level. And oftentimes, God knows I know this from my experience at working at very bureaucratic institutions where decisions were made far above my pay grade that impacted the day-to-day lives of my students. That's not always possible. And I certainly would hope that you would have been fighting the good fight for your students before those decisions get made. Oftentimes we get blindsided by those decisions that upper administration makes. So the reality is, for us, you do what you can. You fight the good fight where you can, and certainly be the advocate that your students need to your administration. So kudos to those that were able to make those, or at least carve out those exemptions if they weren't a part of the initial policy, because those things can certainly have long legs in terms of the PR impact that decisions that are made that can have affect such a large proportion of your students, that it's unfortunate they had to happen. Given the circumstances, it's a very fluid situation we all find ourselves in with regard to the impact of this pandemic on our day-to-day lives. And as I mentioned earlier, the fact that many more of you are watching today than might normally watch if you're at your desks, at your office, at your camp, all on your college campuses, you're working from home now, and that's your new reality, and that's certainly welcome to my world. It's happy to have you part of a community of work from home folks in international ed. What I would say is, as we're at kind of the beginning of it here in the United States, in terms of and some of us are 3 days into having to homeschool our kids, if our school districts are providing the online educational opportunities that students need with regards to their education, maintaining that. Our school district here in Ohio has had to go completely online for K through 12 education, or excuse me, 3 through 12 education, because they all have Chromebooks as part of their educational package in our community, or in our city schools. For those outside of that in the K through 2, they have bags of material, packets of materials that they pick up and they do over the next 3 weeks. That's the 3 weeks that the schools are already set to be closed. Some of us are 2 or 3 days into it and we're already losing our minds. But it's changing how we do what we do when we're trying to do our day jobs, as well as help to educate our children and keep them on track. So change is happening. It's happening every day. It's changing the way we do things. It's changing our lifestyles. It's changing our practices in how we interact with people. And so there's so much going on now these days that it's really, it's hard not to be, your head to be spinning around, just totally losing track of what I'm supposed to be doing now. Is it time for Johnny to do his reading? But for those who know me, with my son Charlie, I had a chance to help him get into some new habits, because when he's home, he likes, particularly when he's on vacation, and he's thought this was a vacation. Since he's not going to school every day, that changes his perspective. But certainly one thing we are focusing on is he's learning how to carry the one when he's doing his math problems. And it's just so much quicker. And my goodness, I can't. I see the Common Core concepts that he's learning. And it takes him twice as long to do that as it does to do the carry the one. And that's just something where it's changing the way he's learning. And that's also throwing another wrench in the works. But I say this as an introduction to the third topic of the day. And that's really is how what we do, particularly those of you on the admissions side in international admissions, how this coronavirus, COVID-19, the pandemic is affecting what you do. For those who know me, I've long been an advocate of having virtual components to your international student recruitment strategy. But certainly since not only has the virus changed the way our colleges operate in terms of their regular day-to-day classwork and courses and day-to-day life on campus, it's also impacting your student recruitment. For those of you who were only ever doing armchair recruitment and virtual recruitment, you're not probably not a whole lot you're going to be changing, other than maybe doing some extra online sessions, admitted student sessions, what have you. But certainly, for those of you on the admissions side that have been used to this time of year doing your beginning to get your admitted doing spring travel for recruiting, getting the 2021 pipeline set up for your recruiting juniors to get them into your pipelines for 2021, or starting to do admitted student events in the spring. Your letters are going to be going out if they haven't already in the next few weeks for admitted students and kind of getting them through the funnel, working with your alumni overseas, doing all these sorts of things that happen in the spring term and coming up in the summer. There's going to be knock-on effects. I don't know how many of you are planning travel yet for fall. And I know so many of you have had to cancel spring travel already. And you probably aren't even looking at fall travel yet. One of my gigs now is running a tour for you. Davis UWC schools in the United States who are looking to recruit at different UWC secondary schools in Asia and Europe. We have a deadline coming up in less than a month, and the deposits normally start coming in this time of year for that tour, but I know they're going to be, everybody's on hold, because who knows whether Asia is going to be back to normal, and even Europe going to be back to normal in time for fall travel that you might want to plan now. Those decisions are going to get pushed. If you want to go on a tour, how late are you going to be able to wait to deposit for a tour? So much of what you might physically do normally on recruitment in a recruitment cycle is all up in the air right now. So how you do what you do to recruit your class, are you already making accommodations knowing that, okay, if you're rolling admissions, you probably have a little bit more flexibility where you can look at other tests. Like, you know, SAT, ACT haven't been required. If you aren't already test optional for undergraduates, maybe this is another good push in that direction, why you should be. Not just because the tests aren't appropriate for international students, but also on the English language side. You know, TOEFL and IELTS have had to cancel their tests, PTE academic, not so much. But are you looking at alternatives like the University of Missouri did? We talked about that last week on the roundup, that a lot of schools are looking at Duolingo now as an alternative to the standard test because it's completely online. It can be taken anywhere, any time in the world. So it gives an institution the flexibility to give options to students that might not have them right now, that might still want to come for the fall. So are you changing what you're doing internationally in the way you recruit? The final article that I posted the link to, it talks about how coronavirus is affecting admissions and what undergraduate, graduate programs are doing to try and make sure that they're still going to be able to have their class that they're expecting in the fall. A lot of schools have canceled on-campus tours. Almost all have by this point, I would think. Others have canceled admitted student events that receptions that might be going on in May, April, May, June. That's happening. But what if those of you who don't already have an active virtual session, or virtual sessions, or a strategy for reaching your international student audiences, what are you doing? I ask this out of interest. What are you going to do to make sure you're still moving your students through that admissions funnel towards admitted, deposited, visa'd, and enrolled in the fall? What are you doing to move them along through the process since you're not able to do the physical things? Email is obviously going to be an essential component of your strategies, but emails have one value. What are you doing virtually to reach them? The Inside Higher Ed story mentions what Platform Q Education, folks that I, full disclosure, used to work for as part of College Week Live, the events that they do, but they've also made they've reemphasized what they do at Platform Q to private events and virtual events for specific cohorts, admitted students, transfer students, international students, whatever it might be throughout the process. So do you have that kind of a component to your recruitment strategy now, because you're not able to do the physical events? Do you have an online component? That could be something as simple as a Facebook live chat or a WeChat, and if you're looking at China. Obviously, a lot of institutions see their China numbers go in the toilet this year because of what's happened, because of the fears of coming, in addition to all the visa fears that already existed and other fears that they had being in the United States. So what are you doing for that audience? What are you doing for your other key target markets? Are you doing anything online to reach them, to assure them, to provide the level of comfort that they need and answers to questions that they have about what you do at your institutions and what the plan is? And a lot of us probably may not know what the exact answers are going to be, but it's making sure that you have a presence for your target audiences and that you are making an effort reaching out to them, not just through email, but making hopefully face to one to many kind of contacts like a virtual chat would have, where you can be interacting with those audiences, reassuring them, the students, the parents, and giving them the kind of support that they need to make informed decisions. And the more you can do that as an institution, as an admissions office, as an international office, the better positioned you're going to be to show that student, that parent, that you're the right place for them for the upcoming year. So hopefully there's been some good food for thought out of today's roundup. Certainly thank you for being a part of it. It's really encouraging to see those of you now working from home, taking the time out for a half hour here on a Wednesday afternoon to check us out. Certainly encourage you to, if you haven't already checked out the newsletter, The link to that's on the comment section, but you can go to smieconsulting.org, go to the subscribe page, and you can subscribe to the newsletter, see past editions of the Roundup on video here on Facebook, on our YouTube channel, and also listen on the podcast. So thanks very much for joining me this week, and let's pray for better days ahead. Cheers.